All right, we're going to call the Senate Education Committee to order. Today's date is February 26th. The time is a little bit after 8. In attendance today is my co-chairman Thomas, Vice Chairman Davis, Senator Huggins, Senate President Stevens, and myself, co-chairman Meyer, and also we have Senator Olson. So we have a quorum. We have the whole committee with us this morning, and I want to welcome everybody for being here. Today the committee will take up we're going to continue consideration of Senate Bill 228, an act establishing the Governor's Performance Scholarship Program. And just give everybody a little bit of history and bring everybody up to speed. February 3rd, we started this process in a joint hearing with the House. On February 15th, the committee brought forward a committee substitute for discussion. February 17th, the committee received amendments that were intended to be adopted into the administration's original bill. And so today, and then on Monday, that our staff walked us through various versions, the original version, RCS, and then the amendments. And of course, we looked at all the similarities and differences and had discussion accordingly. And so today what we'd like to do is hear actually from the commissioner, who hasn't had an opportunity yet to comment on the substitute that we brought forward and or the amendments that we discussed last time. So certainly we want to give Commissioner Ledoux the opportunity to discuss that, as well as address some of the questions that we have brought forward. Also, we have the Department of Education Early Development is here as well. And so with that, if there's nothing else to come before the committee, I'd like to welcome Commissioner Ledoux to the table. And if you would, please put yourself on the record.
I got it. Thank you, Chair Meyer. For the record, my name is Larry Ledoux. I'm Commissioner of the Department of Education and Early Development. And with the Chair's permission, I'd like to ask Diane Behrens to come forward, because sure. The nature of some of the questions that we'll be moving back and forth, and it will save a bit of time. I'm going to briefly review some topics related to the committee substitute, and then I'll be available to answer questions. And I know that you submitted a number of questions to the department yesterday that we hope to be able to address today between Diane Behrens and myself. As we look at the committee substitute, probably one of the more interesting changes is the alternative requirements. As you know, the Governor's Performance Scholarship called for 4 years of math, 4 years of science, 4 years of language arts, and 3 years of social studies. The committee substitute provides an alternative of 3 years of mathematics, 4 years of language arts, 3 years of science, and 3 years of social studies, and 2 years of foreign language or Alaska native language. That's a very common alternative. It still provides a rigorous college curriculum. I like the or, and I have no objections or concerns with that alternative. I think that most college-bound young people do take foreign language, and many colleges require it. So I think it's a great alternative, and will make the bill more flexible. I do have some concerns with the removal of the standardized test requirement in the new committee substitute. I think the standardized test provides insurance that the students are prepared. If you look at standardized tests, ACT or SAT, they're a predictor of how a student is going to do during their first year of college. They're accurate for that purpose. They work very well. And Alaska students, actually the ones who take the ACT and SAT, are just slightly above the national average in some of those areas. So we know that our students can perform. They're a good predictor of success. And one of the things that we're trying to do with this program, and one of the primary goals, is to ensure that we're sending young people to the university who can be successful. They also ensure that the grade requirement for the performance scholarship is not empty. It's not just taking these courses. They have to be rigorous. They have to have the content necessary to help the young people succeed in college. Without this test, we're going to see, I think, massive grade inflation in other programs around the nation that do not have that kind of validation of the scores, then they quickly outpace the amount of money that's available. And one of the things that we're, again, trying to do is to make sure that when students go to college, they're ready to compete. The university tells us that students who are attending need extensive remediation. We want to end that. And research at other universities shows that we can end that if they come in with rigorous. So removing that requirement is going to open the door, put a lot of pressure on teachers. And also, we want to make sure that these aren't just courses. And if teachers know that they have to teach these courses with rigor because that grade will be validated by a standardized test, we're going to get the rigor we need. So I'm concerned with the removal of the requirement. I'm also very concerned, and I think it actually invalidates to a certain extent what we're trying to do here, is the requirement. You know, you have one tier that's 3.5 or higher. It's an academic scholarship, and it's rigorous. But at the same time, there's no other requirements except the two that we've mentioned, the GPA requirement and the rigorous course requirement. But there's only one scholarship at that level, and that's the only scholarship that you can get by just the student working hard without showing needs. There's no B-plus scholarship. There's no C-plus scholarship without need. Because you go right from that to adding a new qualification for the scholarship on your lower two, and that's needs-based. If you don't have a need, you're not qualified for those scholarships. The governor's performance scholarship, as proposed, is an invitation to all students to participate, not just students whose parents have a financial need. And you've cut off the vast majority of young people in the state of Alaska from participating in this. And if you look at the very goals that are the foundation of this program, it's an invitation for young people as early as sixth grade to start thinking about the choices that they'll make about their courses, to work with parents, and to encourage them to work hard to prepare for college. This scholarship is a challenge to all young people. It's very difficult to tell a child in sixth grade that it's not a challenge to you because your parents may make enough money to help out with college, or that you're not going to have a need. And so I'm very, very concerned with that. Moving the need as part of the requirement for the scholarship is a 180-degree change in the whole intent of the program. In the other house, or the other body, they've introduced or accepted a needs-based amendment to the governor's program that puts the need after the merit. So all students could qualify, but if there is a financial need once they qualify, that need could be met. And that's consistent with the invitation for excellence that we're sending out to young people. I really don't, to be very brief, I really don't see this as a scholarship as much as I see it as a challenge and a contract with students. If you perform, if you work hard, if you make the right choices in school, we're going to be there to help you. With the needs-based component added on, I think it provides a real need for young people whose families cannot pay to go to college in Alaska. So those are the two main areas of concern. I'm also concerned with a bit of the lowering of the standards for your lowest or the career scholarship. I just talked to the director of ABTEC, on the way back from Point Barrow last week, and I asked him about the math requirement and the science requirement. His response was, we need even more than what they need in the colleges in some of these fields. And almost all career technical education specialists will tell you, do not lower the standards. But it doesn't mean that students need to take calculus in either category. I think the minimum math in both areas that they'll tell you they need is Algebra 1, Algebra 2, and Geometry. But all students need that. If you go into a technical education program, you're going to need that. And that would be the core math requirement in all areas. But I don't believe that they have to be the same math courses beyond that. So it would be Algebra 1, which many students take now in eighth grade across the country, including Alaska. And the way it would be designed, if you take Algebra 1 in eighth grade, since it's still offered in high school, that course would be counted towards your four-year math requirement. Some of the courses that you would take in a career scholarship, and the state would work with districts to determine what courses meet the need. In a vocational, in fact, I've listed out some courses I can share with you, but in a vocational program, you may take power mechanics instead of physics, physical science instead of physics. You may take earth science instead of geology. There's a lot of different choices to make sure that these kids have the problem, I don't want to call them kids, these young people have the problem-solving skills to be successful. The greatest tragedy, from my point of view, is to create a dream in young people to go to college. And as I move around the state, I ask kids what they're going to do. Everywhere I go, they're going to college and tech school. That's what they say, regardless of where they live. And I ask them, this is going to be tougher for you to achieve these standards. And they look at me like, what's new? We work harder anyway. They can do it. So I believe we can meet those standards, but I don't want to lower them. Lowering a standard for young people is not the way to get them to perform. And traditionally, many times when we lower the standards end up affecting our minority or immigrant populations because they tend to be lowered for them, and they don't need that or want that. I believe if we set a standard high, if we set a high expectation, they'll achieve it. It's interesting, across the state, we did a survey of the courses that are being offered statewide, and I can give you a copy of that. We called the schools and we determined I'll make it available at the end of the meeting, but because we've been working on these the last day or two. Schools offer at least four courses each year, 57 high schools. Schools offering at least four unique courses over 2 years, 87. Correspondence or alternative schools within districts with other options, 52. Low enrollment or less than current required offerings, distance or correspondence likely necessary, 38 schools. Offer less than 4 years of mathematics, 12 schools in the state offer only 2 years. 21 offer three. Those schools that offer less than 4 years of science, 31 schools offer only 2 years of science, 41 schools offer three. You'll notice that language arts isn't there because all schools offer language arts for 4 years because we require it. That's new. When we required it, the schools adjusted. The performance scholarship will have the effect in rural Alaska of ensuring that a student will have full access to these courses in every school in the state. And by the way, whenever you see these two math courses, 12, that's horrible. There's no excuse for that. Because in that school, the students have a dream to go to college. I guarantee it if I talk to them. And we're not delivering the program they need to be successful in college, regardless of this scholarship. And as an educator, I believe that should change immediately. We can do better than that with the options that we have available. It's not the size of the school all the time. It's other factors, some involving leadership and access. So those are the main areas. The biggest difference is the needs before merit, and that's not acceptable.
Okay, we'll take some questions here. I do like your comments about the ACT, SAT. There were some concerns brought up initially that we could be causing grade inflation as teachers try to help kids, you know, qualify for these scholarships. ACT, SAT will tell you how your kids compare nationwide, which is important. Although I know any test is a pain and we all hate to take them, but you got to have some indication how our kids are doing with the rest of the kids nationwide. Questions for the commissioner? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you look at the standardized tests with ACT and SAT, having gone through that myself, I guess I was wondering where can you take those tests? Are they available out in some of the smaller high schools out in Diomede and places like Shaktulik and Savunga?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, yes, they are. Any school in the state can become a test center to offer the test.
Are they offering them now currently?
They'll offer them if there's a student that needs to take it.
Okay.
And I assume if a community could not offer it, they would fly them to their central area to take it. So they've never been denied taking the test.
Okay. So there would be an added stress factor if they weren't able to take the test in their home school because they'd be out of their home element and in all honesty, put in somewhat of a disadvantage because they're in a new environment. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, that's correct. But I believe that most schools offer, no matter what the size, in their own community.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Senator Stevens?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, thank you, Commissioner. I agree with you on grade inflation. That's that happens. It happens in all institutions. And I think what you're saying is that these standardized tests would really keep everyone honest, would keep everyone, teachers making sure that the students really do get the material. And that sort of seems to be the key of what in that element you're talking about, testing. That a grade inflation would be a real disservice to students.
Okay. Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you. And Commissioner Ledoux, good to see you again. I'm looking at the sheet that you were just quoting from as far as the schools. And, you know, and Mr. Chairman, I mean, this is quite frankly one of the valuable things of going to an exercise like this, is we do get to look at what's happening out there, and sometimes we're surprised by that. But Commissioner, with that as a backdrop, I guess what I continue, I think that is that we need to know is, since this the scholarship program is also 50% of it's agent for change in schools, at high schools, and middle schools and elementary schools, and that agent for change, what that looks like, that I'll call it metamorphosis, but and how we do it and what the cost factor is for it and how quickly we can do it to be able to conform to the standards that we're looking for people to be able to be eligible for the scholarship program. You don't have to answer that today. I just think it's an important piece for us to understand because we all want our kids to do better.
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, one of the things that's important too as we implement this program is that we will phase it in. There will be time for these adjustments to be made. We're not going to have all the requirements the first year. In other states, they phase in over 4 years. And I think that we can do that, and the law allows for that phase-in of the requirements.
Follow-up, Mr. Chairman. And the other one is just, I assume the department has looked at modules of this. Let's just say there's $100 million in the first year, or $200, but you know, what the impact of different modules of money would be as far as the number of students served as we move forward to full maturity of the program.
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, we have done some modeling based on other states with similar requirements and college systems, and most in particular Wyoming with their Hathaway scholarship. So we do have some predictability models with regard to the scholarship use.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you, Senator Huggins. Any other questions for the commissioner before we go to?
I have one question. That's
Senator Davis.
On the sheet, you said this is a total of 300 and some schools, 339. How many schools do we have in our statewide? 300, that doesn't tell me anything, and this is a total on the right of 339 schools that's doing what's on the paper here?
Through the chair, I'm going to have to respond back to you later today in response to that question. This was developed by my assistant yesterday, and I
think somebody's holding their hand up back there with it.
Okay. We have an answer for you. What I've been informed through the chair, Senator Davis, is that this represents high schools in Alaska, that we have over 500 schools.
500 high schools?
No. Well, what I've just been told is over 339. However, I want to be really careful because I know that we have over 500, and I don't want to make any assumptions on a question from a senator. So what I've been told is 339 high schools and over 500, but I want to make sure I validate that for you.
Right. Okay. Yeah, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, on that point, is that including private schools as well, or are you just counting public schools?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, I can't answer that question. At this point in time, we believe the survey was just public schools.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Very good. Thank you. And if you'll get back to us on that question, probably best just to send it to the committee chairs, then we'll get it out to Senator Davis and the rest of the committee members. Okay. One quick question I have, and then we'll go on to Senator Huggins and Ms. Behrens. Some of the states actually specify what math courses to take. Would you be okay with that? I know you originally just came out 4 years of math, but I think some of us would like to see that means Algebra 1, Algebra 2, Geometry, Calculus, etc.
Senator Meyer, it's our intent to work with districts to list the courses that would meet this requirement. I think, you know, as Senator Stevens indicated, there are three components that make this work. There's the curricula that we require that's important, that it be college and career ready. It can't be any course. The grades that students receive as part of it and the standardized tests, they're all important. And we want to make sure that the courses offered represent the rigor that colleges are asking for. So we will submit a list and we'll work with districts and the university to make sure that the curriculum meets the requirements.
Okay. And we can discuss this more. My question, I guess, would you like to see in a bill us specify the course or just leave it broad in general for you then to specify back to the school districts what the courses are?
I would prefer that the Department of Education work to specify the courses to meet the goals of the program. And that's because sometimes things change and university requirements change, and if it's specified in the law, then we don't have the ability to modify that without coming back to the legislature, whereas the State Board of Education, through their public process and their deliberative process, can respond more expeditiously.
Okay. Senator Huggins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Ledoux, I'm assuming that correspondence school students and homeschool students would be the easiest for them to be able to conform to, because they just have a menu of courses and they just choose those and they've just upped their requirement if they aren't already exceeding the requirement. But is that accurate?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, that is accurate.
Yeah, and with that as a backdrop, how do we in fact communicate to homeschool kinds of students as far as what this means to them?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, the vast majority of homeschool students in the state are affiliated with school district or state-sponsored correspondence programs, so their communication with those families will be quite easy. There are a number of homeschool families in the state that are not affiliated with anyone, and we would just have to communicate through the public information process. They do monitor what the legislature and the department does, because if we even mention correspondence publicly, I start getting letters from these people. So they do have a communication system. They do have an organization, and I have communicated with that organization and would do so again once this bill passes to make sure that everybody is aware of the requirements.
Okay. Ms. Behrens?
If I could just add, for the record, Diane Behrens, Executive Director of the Alaska Commission on Postsecondary Education. The Commission does have a relatively robust outreach and early awareness unit, and we do send age-specific mailings directly into the households. We use the PFD database to identify residents of a certain age and send age-appropriate information. We would certainly plan on making the GPS program a keystone of that outreach going forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. And Diane, before we go to you, I just have one more question about the VOTEC. You had a comment here on not to lower our standards for the VOTEC kids, and I agree 100% with that. However, I don't know which version it is now. I think you're lowering the dollar amount for the VOTEC kids to 3,000 versus 6,000 or whatever the number is for kids going to a university. And I think what we're finding is that the VOTEC schools can be just as expensive as the university. Any comments on that?
Senator Meyer, you're absolutely right. There is an amendment being proposed in the other body that would allow students who qualify under the academic scholarships to transfer that award to a career tech organization. The vast majority of career and technical education courses awarded in the state are awarded by the University of Alaska. And so students who qualify, the way the law is written, right now students who qualify under the academic component can use that money at the University of Alaska because the university offers certificates and degrees. So the career scholarship for $3,000 could be used at the university, but it could also be used at non-university schools. And we were, and I could submit this for the record, but we were looking at the costs of a career and technical education at AvTech. Mm-hmm. And The highest program for tuition there is $5,000 for a licensed practical nurse, but most of them are in the $1,600 to $2,500 range. Where the expenses grow is in tools and other expenses. So it may be that that $3,000 figure is too low. And they do not have any courses, you know, of study, because they list a number of days for their course completion. They don't have any that go past 2 years in these particular programs. So that's something that we could take a close look at. And certainly within the needs-based component that was adopted by the other body, career tech are also eligible for the same needs-based based on room and board and other reasonable costs of attendance at their school. So that amount would increase. So we are taking a look at that at the request of the other body also.
Okay, very good.
Senator Olson.
One final question, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, on the vote, those kids that are going to VOTEC school, are they required, or going down the career pathway, are they required to go ahead and take the ACT or the SAT test?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, at this point, we would anticipate that they could qualify through the ACT or our WorkKeys assessment that we have, and we would have commensurate scores, so it would be either or.
So you're saying you don't have to take that test in order to get into VOTEC training?
If you, the Career and Technical Scholarship, it would be the WorkKeys or the ACT. So you would not have to take the ACT. You would be taking the WorkKeys that we will be offering next year to all juniors in the state of Alaska.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Olson. I think we're going to want to spend more time on the SAT. SAT, I don't think, well, I don't want to speak for the whole committee, that there's a problem with taking that test, because it does give us an indication of how our students are doing. But if I remember right, in the original bill, you had a pretty high standard. Was it in the late 20s that the student had to meet with 28, which is pretty high?
Chair Meyer, the bill does not contain any categories for the ACT. It just says that we will offer a standardized test. The inference was that the State Board of Education would set those, but philosophically, I would want a level no higher than necessary than what we're using the test for, and that's to predict success in college and to validate their grades. So it's not my intent to create one so high that it's going to have the opposite effect of what we're trying to do with the test. The misuse of tests is the biggest problem. We want to use it to validate the grades and the preparation for college so that they'll be successful. So I would not be looking necessarily for a very, very high level. We find that the vast majority of students who attend the University of Alaska Fairbanks, where they use that as part of their criteria to earn a baccalaureate degree, already receive an average score that indicates that they're going to be successful. We may be a bit higher than that. I can give you data on the minimum scores that ACT are predictive of college performance, and they're different in the sciences. I have them with me, and before I leave today, I'll make sure that your assistants have those. And also, I can give you some historical performance data on the SAT and ACT tests so that you can see that our students do generally perform.
Okay. Yeah, I think we'd like to have that. Everything's personal. My daughter did very poorly in ACT, but did very high on the SAT, so that's why I think it's good to look at both of them. They're different tests.
Chair Meyer, it would be many programs accept the ACT or the SAT, and that would be easy to do. They cross-correlate, and actually we've done correlation studies, and they're available. I could also show you the correlation studies, so it would be very easy to do ACT or SAT as a qualifier. Okay. They both are predictive of the success during the first year of college.
Very good. Senator Stevens.
Commissioner, say we do pass this bill and we get to the right qualifiers in here, and it comes in agreement with the other body, and we fund it $400 million. Do you and can you track your students to tell us whether it's worked or not? Can you tell us the success? Are you able to do that right now, or will you be able to do that in the future? Or are we depending on the university to let us know how many students actually complete their college courses and get a degree?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, the Alaska Commission on Postsecondary Education recently submitted a grant that would allow us to do longitudinal studies up through the university to determine how our students are performing. But the GPS bill, as it's written now, requires us to give an annual report to the legislature based on the goals of the program so that we can track and inform you every year exactly where the scholarships are going, the impact, how they're being achieved, and what's happening at the university. I think that's very critical. These programs are so cultural changing in our state, and this program has the potential to change education in the state of Alaska for a number of reasons. It will be important that we have good data to monitor the evolution, because there will be impacts that are unpredictable at this point in time. And so we will be collecting data to make sure that it meets the goals that we have and that you've set, assuming you pass and fund this bill.
Thank you.
Okay, very good. Ms. Behrens, you haven't had an opportunity yet, I don't believe, to comment on anything on the CS or the original bill or the amendments. And so we'd like to hear from you.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I appreciate the opportunity to speak to the governor's proposal today. As you may expect, the commission is very excited about the prospect of having a program that offers equal opportunity to every Alaska student to proceed into post-secondary education and training. And so I did want to add that we've been very involved in the development of this bill. I think the provisions in the bill are all mindful. One particular example, I know there's been some discussion about the six-year framework that the bill proposes. In addition to changing the behavior of students in terms of their course-taking pattern, we also want to incent their early interest in continuing on to post-secondary education. Clearly, if the rigor of their secondary program is to be put to best use, to shorten the time between secondary and post-secondary education is key. If we allow students to, or Alaskans to, continue to do what they've done, which is not bad, but comes at a cost to them of postponing their post-secondary education, they put at risk their chance of completing that post-secondary education. The longer a student waits to go on to post-secondary education, there is a direct correlation with their ability to succeed. So that's why the 6 years are in. And in the information that Ms. Butler submitted in response to the prior committee questions, she does point out that that it's at higher costs when students delay. Their chance of succeeding is diminished, and that is why in most other states that have a program like this, they don't allow 6 years. A student must continue within a year of graduating from high school. So there's actually more flexibility in this program than you would see in the other states that have similar programs.
Okay. Very good. Questions?
Mr. Chairman, before she continues, the information that came from Stephanie, we have that? I don't.
I don't think we do, no.
We sent it over. It's a letter dated February 23rd, directed to the chairs.
Do we have that?
Well, we can get it. That's okay. It's not a problem. I just want you to know that I don't have it.
Okay.
Yeah.
It exists.
It's somewhere. Okay. We'll track it down and make sure you have that, Senator Davis. Senator Stevens.
Oh, thank you. Ms. Behrens, I understand what you've said about the six-year issue and the fact that it does take, if people wait, it takes longer to get a degree. But we have just had a large group of University of Alaska students here this past weekend. I think we were all surprised, if you had a chance to meet them, how many of them are non-traditional students. Mm-hmm. My experience as a college professor is that I had a lot of students who were married, children, come back to get a college degree and want to become a teacher. I guess I'm having trouble reconciling what you're saying. I understand what you're saying, but I'm not sure it's important because, I mean, I know it's of course important what you say, but I'm not sure, it seems to me that we are if the final goal is to educate our workforce, to get young people or even middle-aged people to get a college degree and become successful and contribute to society, what difference does it make if they are 18 or 25 when they start college?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, I agree with your statement. I would suggest, though, that financial aid programs for adult students, non-traditional students, would be outside the scope of the proposal. So I think it's important. I'm not saying there should not be programs that address those needs, but the entire structural objectives of this program really do lead to trying to incent students to have a sense of urgency in terms of their continuing their post-secondary education and training, and to complete it within a shorter period of time. Although the governor's proposal allows grants for half-time attendance, if you look statistically at students who attend less than full-time, their chance of completing their certificate or diploma also goes down substantially because they're dragging their the process out during a period of time that they're they have a lot of other demands, other interests. They are not focused specifically on post-secondary education and training, and that's the behavior we're trying to incent.
Follow? Well, I'm not sure. I mean, I appreciate what you're saying, and I think you're probably right. If this program were to be fully engaged, I think you'd probably see a change in the school district. As Commissioner said, you'd see more young people going right into college rather than taking a year to go to Europe or fishing in Bristol Bay for a couple of years. You know, I think you'd probably see that. But, you know, I just keep looking at, you know, what a terrible shame not to also encourage many people mature at different rates, and some are not ready to go to college when they're 18. They need that maturing time to decide what they want to do. So understand what you're saying. Appreciate what you have said. I just think we've got to address that issue, and maybe it has to be addressed outside of this bill. Thank you.
Okay, Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Behrens, you talked about the idea of people being encouraged to look forward to college. What do we do now, and at what point do we start encouraging or even teaching a class or having it a portion of some class that encourages and makes sure that kids start to understand what that will be? Because unless things have changed, I really didn't look at that much in elementary school, whether I was going to go to college, and I don't think I did in junior high, even, to tell you the truth, and probably not the first couple of years of high school did I really seriously consider what I was going to do. I might have been the unique at that time.
Well, thank you for the question, Senator. Through the outreach and early awareness activities at the Post-Secondary Commission, which the unit has been in place for about 8 years now, we've been developing programs. The earliest outreach effort we have is second grade. We have a program called I Know I Can. It's a joint activity with the University of Alaska. We send college graduates into the classroom to read a age-appropriate storybook about some animal characters who are thinking about what they want to be when they grow up, and it encourages the kids to start then. In the fifth and sixth grade, we have a program called I'm Going to College, where there is a curriculum that the teachers of the kids share with them that gets them thinking about careers and the preparation necessary for careers. And then the kids are bused to a local campus. They spend a day on campus as college students. The university actually has some information that they send directly to students when they're freshmen in high school. We've tried to develop our program so it's complementary with the outreach activities at the university as well, rather than duplicative. So they send information to the students when they're freshmen. We also share information during the freshman and sophomore years with the students. It talks about planning a four-year high school curriculum that is preparatory for going on to post-secondary training. And then in the junior year and senior year, we send them directly. We do try to promote going to college in Alaska. We have a magazine that we annually produce that highlights all of the accredited institutions in Alaska and talks about the opportunity that's here in Alaska and gives them information about what programs are offered at those institutions. And that's sent directly to the students every year.
And if I might.
Sure. Go ahead.
Is that widespread within the curriculums of the various schools? It's been in place? You say the committee's only been around 8 years, but have they, not necessarily forced, but has this information been available and people been, and school districts been making use of it at a high rate at an early age?
They have, Mr. Chair. We've had a very enthusiastic participation by the institutions. I can get you some specific information about how many districts are participating in the various initiatives, but I believe this year we anticipate that over 2,000 fifth graders will be participating, for instance, in the I'm Going to College program. So it is, the schools have welcomed it. There was a vacuum for this sort of information to be made available to them. So it's increasingly ever-present. And the direct mailings we send to every resident student of within a certain age. So whether they're in the school system or not in the school system, they receive the information through direct mailings.
Okay. And just sure. Two other minor. We talk a lot about immigrant families and their kids. Is there outreach also in those areas, more to the family? Because I see if the kids are maybe seeing it, but if the parents don't get the message and see that it's important and how they can help their kids, and in many cases they probably can't. So is there also an intent to try and beef up that through the PTAs or whatever?
There are. The outreach unit, which is based in our Anchorage office, it's actually at the Diamond Mall, so that there's just a walk-in spot there. But they do engage faith-based organizations, Boys and Girls Clubs, YMCAs. It's a little bit difficult getting to the parents. We do direct mailings to the parents. We'll send them a postcard that says, we sent this to your child. Your input is really important. Where I would say that we have not done a lot of, all of our information is in English. So to the extent that we have first-generation Alaskans who do not speak English, that's an area where we would need to improve. But in terms of just reaching out to the parents, that's something that we agree is critical, and we do engage in that.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Commissioner, do you want to comment on that?
Thank you. For the record, my name is Larry Ledoux. I'm the Commissioner of Education. As part of the implementation of the GPS program, what you'll see before the state school board is a regulation to require education plans, six-year education plans, beginning in sixth grade. And that means that a school official, a parent and a student, will sit down once a year to review their plan. So the parents can receive information about, again, choices, scholarships, and pathways. And this is very, very important because many members of our immigrant community and residents whose family culture is not a college culture, if you will, that they receive that information about the opportunities available through the scholarship program, through needs-based and merit, that's very important. Also, related to your question, the state is in the final stages of approving a new CTE plan that I think Senator Huggins has been a part of. And it calls for, and we will do it, the development of grade level expectations in career and technical education, which includes college, starting in kindergarten. We'll be developing integrated lessons that can be taught through the school system. And also, in states that have merit programs, they do have mandatory small curriculum units, usually in the seventh or eighth grade, that are online, designed for students and parents to start cranking up their awareness of what's going on. So I think we'll fit very well with the efforts of the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education. So lots of efforts in this area.
That sounds good. We appreciate that information.
Okay, very good. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this has to do with a comment that Senator Stevens brought up related to students that are not on a continuous pathway. And having graduated from high school in the early 70s and having the pipeline come on, the big temptation was to go to work up there. And those students that I was, were my contemporaries that went on up there and worked, they never came back. And I see this whole cycle going through again, where you've got the natural gas pipeline possibly coming on, that we're going to be, by the time this GPS scholarship program is implemented, we're going to be into that cycle again. And I think that with the state, it's one thing if a student is paying their own money and decides not to go. But when the state steps in, starts giving them a scholarship, now the state is on the hook with an investment that's there. If it's not realized and they drop out and don't finish off with a graduate with a diploma on the wall, then I think the state has kind of lost their investment to a certain degree. And so in spite of the idea that certainly there are non-traditional students that are out there, but I would say that the large degree of people that don't continue on, and no matter, and I begged my dad to go up there and work, and he obviously was holding the purse string, so I was either live at home or live someplace else, and I wasn't about to live someplace else. So with that, I tend to agree with your plan to try and get them into school and continue on that pathway. Because after I went to medical school, I went to law school, and it was a whole lot harder. You know, you're used to a lifestyle, you're used to a income, you're used to I just dread those days of being a poor student, and I hated them then, and I look back with disdain on them now. But the rewards of education certainly are there, because it opens doors that nothing else can.
Mr. Chair.
You're probably still paying for those years in college. Senator Stevens.
Well, I think just in response to the Senator's comments, I appreciate what he said as well. But yeah, I guess what I realize is there is not going to be another large scholarship bill in my lifetime in this legislature. There simply will not be. This is the only one we're going to have. And I would think it'd just be a shame to do this bill and to leave out non-traditional students. I mean, I've said it before, I don't need to say it again, but it seems like there's so many students out there that the reality, I mean, the principle you're talking about, Diane, is great. I like that principle, that you encourage kids to go right from high school to college. The reality is many people don't. And we need teachers. We need nurses. The nurses and teachers that we are training in this state right now are primarily adults, people who are non-traditional. So I need to think this through more clearly, but I'm hesitant to eliminate non-traditional students from the scholarship.
Very good.
Yes.
Senator Huggins?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, a couple, three things. Number one, the scholars program as we have today, how do you see the effect and the modification of that program based on the governor's program going forward?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, I'm not sure I can comment on the future of the program, but the university's program provides scholarship funds, I think around $1,375 per semester, or about $11,000 over 4 years, and it rewards students in the top 10% of a graduating class. But there's no requirement for curriculum, grade point average, or a rigorous program. And so it's very different in that respect. It just provides funds if you're in the top 10% of your graduating class to the university. So the GPS is very different than that because it demands a rigorous curriculum. It demands a certain GPA, and it demands a certain score to validate all of that. So it's a very different. I would hope personally that the program would continue because it's a great program. It supports and helps pay for kids attending college. So I see them as very compatible. I do believe that the impact of the GPS will ensure that top 10% is going to be better prepared to be successful in college, that they won't require remediation, and that they will be more successful in their participation at the university.
Go ahead, Senator.
Yeah, thank you for that. And the other piece is shortage professional disciplines that we have demands for in Alaska, as example. Have you thought about any modifiers or unique pieces that would help us address that if we wanted another Dr. Olson, as example? But elements so that we nurses, I mean, you name whatever the shortage discipline is, how we can have a target factor to begin that production with, I mean, just trying to up the numbers and quality.
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, I'm going to answer a little bit and then defer to my colleague who can speak to, you know, professional preparation programs. The GPS program would allow a student who achieved a baccalaureate, perhaps down south. Many of our students, you know, go south for their education. If they go down south, pick up a baccalaureate degree, they can come back to Alaska, and they still have 2 years of eligibility that they could use for graduate or professional school, depending on how they performed with that. They could also, well, I don't want to go too far into these what-ifs. So there has been no discussion about extending it to professional preparation programs under the GPS. Although I will say that if we can graduate students in 4 years, which is much more possible if they don't have to spend the first year taking remedial courses, that they're going to be better prepared to be successful to get into these professional schools without accumulating the same amount of debt. So I think that it does have that effect. We structured the 6 years simply because we wanted because many young people will go out for a year or two, and their parents send them so that they can find out what it's like down south, if you will. Many of them come back, and we wanted to add that flexibility so a student who didn't want to go to college for 2 years or 3 years could still come back within that window. And that's different. That flexibility is different than other states. In other states, if you don't start immediately after high school, you're done. If you miss a semester, you lose a whole semester of eligibility beyond that. We did not include that because Alaskans are a bit different, and their experiences are different, and their options are different. So we've added as much flexibility, but again, we haven't considered professional.
Okay. Mr. Chairman,
at
a more elementary level, let's take high school teachers, math teachers, science teachers, all those that are short now, you're hard to come by. I mean, that's another component that it appears to me that if we had a strategy that could be an element of what we're doing here, some sort of incentive factor to produce more math teachers for high schools or middle schools. Hey, just a thought. And finally, Mr. Chairman, the business of tracking students, I, number one, it's one thing I feel confident in saying that it's a hard thing to do, and we haven't done it very well overall in our country. But we just, the commissioner mentioned about a grant to do tracking of students, and I just thought, what is that more important for the university to track the students on their campus, or is it more important for you to have the information? My answer is all the above. But I guess what I would commend to us is that we look at some point in time in the future, getting together a forum and have a discussion with the university president, the high school president, the commissioner and his folks here with us to talk about an evolving strategy so that we can have an integrated tracking strategy that the information is available to Ms. Behrens. Maybe she's the centerpiece to it. But I know we can do better than what we're doing, but I'd appreciate both of your thoughts on that.
Ms. Behrens?
Thank you. Diane Behrens for the record. Through the chair, Senator Huggins, the grant application that the commissioner referenced is for a state longitudinal data system. Essentially, we propose to do just that, working with the Department of Labor, the Department of Education, the University of Alaska, potentially Health and Social Services, and Corrections. We'd like to develop an integrated system that allows us to not only track the students who successfully move through the pipeline, but those who fall through the cracks. Because I think you really can't understand the benefit of education unless you can identify the cost of not being educated, because it's really the span between the two that matters. So if we are successful in getting that grant, we'll start a 3-year process to develop this integrated data sharing process.
Thank you.
Okay. Very good. Senator Davis.
Thank you. I want to go back to where Senator Stevens was. I can agree with what Diane has said, why we need to encourage our students to continue into college, but I have a grave concern about those non-traditional students, and particularly after having the weekend with the university students and them testifying and talking about what their needs are. And I also agree with what Senator Stevens said about, hey, this might be the last shot at us getting a scholarship bill in the lifetime, in mine. And I want to know from the department if you would be interested and willing to consider adding even to that bill something for non-traditional students then to leave them out of the mix of the 6-year window that you have there that would accommodate them in some kind of way. I don't know if you're interested in doing that, but that might be the key to where we need to go. Because I was thinking first that we could remove the 6 years and just leave it silent, but for the reason that you stated. I can see that it could stay there, particularly if you had a student go away for 4 years, got a degree, came back and had 2 years left, could use that for higher education. That would be wonderful. So I'd like to have that opportunity, but could you answer if you would be willing to consider, I mean, we could work on it as a committee, but I'd like to have input from you if you think that would be the way to go or give some suggestions on what we should do to address that issue.
Well, through the chair, Senator Davis, the purpose of the GPS is to inspire young people that are currently in the system to work harder and take more rigorous curriculum and develop a vision for success.
I understand that.
At the same time, you know, I met with 25 or 30 university students, and they were quite eloquent in talking about the need for support, and they were talking about when you're 40 or 45 or 30. And I believe that, you know, having taught at the college for a time or two in my career, that there is a need in that area. Whether they're compatible or not, I don't know. One of the areas that some schools, in terms of the non-traditional student, they do have alternative pathways to access scholarships, not necessarily when they're 30 or 40, but students who have not been successful in the traditional four-year high school, GED pathways available in some merit scholarship programs, and also even a special education track are available in some programs. But on the other hand, we're trying not to spread out. Every time you add a different section, you're putting a demand on the funding, and opening it up to, as you suggest, to anyone who decides to go back to college and has a need would change the focus of this scholarship, because it's looking forward in terms of trying to, again, inspire young people to be successful. So I, they almost seem incompatible, but to say that is not to say that there isn't a need for these people, but that's not my expertise right now.
And if I just may, through the chair, Senator Davis, there is an existing program on the books that does not look at age, and in fact, the Alaska Advantage needs-based grant is that program. The average age of a grant recipient there is 28. So it tracks specifically with that. However, the funding source for that is very small. There has not been, until the year before last, there were no GF funds made available to that. And the corporation, which used some of its earnings on investments to support that to the tune of about $500,000 a year for the last few years, we are no longer in a position that we're able to do that. So for the 10-11 year, we're kind of in the last year of really a known funding source for that. Thereafter, the program will either sort of stop for lack of funding, or we will be back to you to ask for consideration for funding there. But that would be another program which is specifically targeted to any student who is in the system, and it just awards from the highest need as far as funds are available.
Senator Davis?
Yes, at the present time, that's all state funds in the Advantage Scholarship.
This year, we had some corporation funds made available. This is the last year, the 9-10 year, that we would be able to do that. There is a small amount, I would say a little over 100,000 of federal dollars, and then the legislature appropriated in the capital budget in FY9 some funding that we've been spreading over a 3-year period.
Okay, that's good. That's good to know.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Senator Davis. Okay, any other questions from committee members? I guess I would have one for you, Ms. Behrens. I'm trying to remember, too, in the governor's original bill, was the FAFSA required, even though it's a merit scholarship and not a needs-based scholarship? And if so, why do we? I mean, as you've heard, it's a pain to do that thing, even for the commissioner.
Well, first let me just put in a plug for the new online FAFSA process. It is actually much improved this year over last year, and there are further streamlining changes slated for next year. But the bill itself does not say that it would be required. The commission would intend to use that as a single application because it is a form that is already required in 95% of the cases. It would allow us an efficient, effective process to receive application on all Alaskans filing the FAFSA and intending to go to school in Alaska. So that was the reason for doing it. The other is really on the data side. Without that information, we would not be able to tell you sort of the socioeconomic status of the folks you are giving money to. So that's why we're proposing to do it that way.
Okay, and they are required each year?
Is that they correct? Are. It's an annual process.
Okay, great. Senator Stevens?
No, I think we've made great progress here today, and I think we still have some things to talk about, and I think Senator Davis and I are particularly interested in making sure that we address the issue of non-traditional students, whether this is the right place to do it or not. It's consideration that I think we need to give.
No, I would agree. Alaska is definitely unique from other states and with the opportunities our students have after high school. So, that is still kind of a question. How do we deal with those folks? Well, if there's no other questions, I think what we'd like to do is Monday we are taking up a bill, Senate Bill 283, an act relating to the legal age for school attendance. And so we'll go ahead and take that up on Monday. We could easily bring this back up if there's still some more questions or concerns. I'm not sure if you're around Monday, that would be great. But what I'd like to do after that then, or shortly after that, will be a lot of our members will be going to the energy conference, and so I'm going to ask and my co-chair as well for our staff to get with each committee members or your staff, or certainly send us your thoughts, concerns, and then over the break perhaps we can put together another CS now that we have your concerns, your thoughts. I apologize. Last time the CS came out, I could see the smoke coming out of your ears. You wanted to comment, and we just ran out of time. So I apologize. And but now we have your comments, and appreciate that. And I think the committee members now also have a better feel for the bill and their the direction they like to see it go. So I think we're at a point here where we can make another attempt at a CS sometime next week, and then so when we all get back, we'll address this again and hopefully can make progress and move it on. Senator Stevens, any thoughts?
No. Okay. You've got a good plan there, sir.
Because obviously this needs to get up to finance. It's going to have a lot of financial concerns that we're not even going to deal with or address, nor should we. We're here to set the policy for education. Okay, with that.
Did we get answers to the questions and things here?
Well,
is that...
I was going through this. I think
you
the
think
commissioner
pretty much they are covered.
Well, the commissioner.
I thought they were going to give us something in writing.
I think he addressed some of these verbally, and I know I asked some as well.
Some of them have been addressed on that, but I was wondering if they. I know maybe they haven't had a chance to do that, but those questions probably be helpful if they were answered. Some of the concerns are on there. They got all next week to work on it because we're not going to be here.
Okay. Mayor, we will have those questions answered for you by Monday.
By Monday, okay.
We were prepared to answer them today.
You're going to make your staff work this weekend. That's fine.
Over the weekend too.
That's fine. Now we did get this. Was this? Yeah, this was provided by Diane Barnes. Governor's Performance Scholarship Aid by Family Income, and then it has the various income levels and then what you could expect as far as NEETS grants and
that's good.
Pell grants, etc. So that was very helpful. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Commissioner?
Chair, I can answer question 16 very easily. This is a complicated bill with many different components. Is this too much to do in 1 year? No. We can do it.
Senator Steve?
There's one thing we hadn't heard from Ms. Behrens about the issue of not putting needs before merit, and I assume you're comfortable with that, making merit the first stage and then needs sort of the last stage. And as we've been talking about the unmet needs part of the FAFSA, so that's I'm sure you'd be very comfortable trying to work that, make that system work.
Absolutely. It would be unfortunate to set a lower standard for economically disadvantaged individuals and see them succeed at lower rates than everyone else.
Thank you.
Okay, very good. If there's no other comments from committee members, then we'll be back here Monday morning at 8 o'clock, and Commissioner, we'll look forward then to your answers to these questions. Thank you. With that, we're adjourned.